Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and of course, truck heists. I'm Dan Morin, and I am joined this week, as always, by my good pals, the Staring Buddies. Guy English is here. Hi, Guy.
I honestly was going to start with, hey, we're back, boys, truck heists. So I'll go to my fallback, which is, I'm going to not make you bleep because it's a little early in the episode, but Carl Bucking Lumley. Wow. He's awesome.
What was the middle word you said there? Is that a word that I have to clean up?
Bucking.
Bucking.
Bucking. Bucking. Bucking. With a B.
Like Bucky.
Like Bucky.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like Bucky. Right.
Just checking.
You know what? We're starting out. We can just take it over. I'll pick another line if you
That's
want.
Fine. No, we're good. Okay. John Maltz is also here. Hi, John.
I don't know what you've heard, but I am not one of the big three.
Do you have a hat?
Well, I do.
Interesting. Interesting.
I have several hats.
We are here to discuss episode 2 of the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, currently airing on Disney Plus, entitled The Star Spangled Man. And if you might recall, he has a plan. I think Mr. Maltz is doing our recap duty this week.
That is correct.
Can I start us off with a trivia question?
Sure.
Yeah.
Trivia question. How many Captains America or Captain Americas are there in this episode?
Wow. In this episode?
How many people in this episode have had the mantle of Captain America?
Well, as they say it, Isaiah Washington.
Five.
Bradley.
Right? Bradley. What's his name?
Isaiah Bradley.
Yeah,
he is at some point. He is Captain America
at some point.
Yeah. But they don't say it in the show, though. They just
I'm talking about comic stuff. Right. I mean, there are by my count.
Sorry. Based on all the comics, yeah. Okay, sorry. I thought you meant who have actually.
No. I was just
in the MCU.
Just silly tribute.
Yeah. What did you come up with?
I came up with four.
I think it's five.
All right. Who's number five? Because I've got it's Sam. It's Bucky. It's Isaiah. It's Walker. Who's the fifth?
Who is the fifth?
Peggy Carter.
Maybe I miscounted.
It's good podcasting.
But I don't know who that kid is.
He's Eli Bradley.
Battle stories.
No, the kid is Eli Bradley, who is Patriot at some point.
Okay.
In the Young Avengers.
So he's Patriot, right.
Where am I getting Washington from?
I don't know. Where are you getting Washington from? It's near Baltimore.
That's true.
That's true. Geographic.
Now I feel like, I remembered somebody early on, and now I can't remember who it is, but I must have just miscounted.
Yeah, okay, I don't think. he is at a one point Lieutenant America. Seems, I don't know, a little weird, but
Lieutenant America. That's a bad code name.
He's the Young Avengers version of Captain America, basically. Yes.
Major America is pretty funny.
Major America.
General America. Captain never makes. He never makes it to General America. It's really sad.
Yeah, General America feels like it makes light bulbs and refrigerators and cars.
Anyway, enough stalling. John, why don't you do a recap for us?
Okay. So John Walker is in his high school locker room talking about his responsibility becoming Captain America. First with his wife. I assume that's his wife. Yes. And then his buddy. Then he's out on the field where a band playing a modern version of the Star Spangled Man song from the first Avenger and a bunch of dancers and a cheering crowd are welcoming him onto Good Morning America with the real world host, Sarah Haynes. I did have to look that up. Then we learn that he's got this big pedigree as a soldier without, at least as far as we know, having superpowers. But most importantly, he's got guts. And he never met
three medals of honor is you're dead. You're basically dead after you get one. Like that, there's if you manage to survive getting three medals of honor or something is seriously weird.
At that
like
age, too, right? That guy's what, 30 something?
Yeah, it's very strange.
Yeah, he does make a crack later on about jumping on grenades and the thing he does with his helmet. Like maybe,
I love that.
He specializes in getting medals of honor. He's got one weird trick to win a medal of honor. I don't know. But.
I see that at the bottom of articles all the time. I did want to say I was very amused because he spends a lot of time preparing to say his opening line, you know, Good Morning America. And I thought it was going to be funny that like he'd spent all this time practicing and working on it only to realize when he says it that it's nighttime.
It's nighttime. And,
but then, of course, it's the show. So that was the joke.
Yeah.
I have some thoughts about that. Let's save that looking for later. So he never met Steve, but he feels like a brother gag. Bucky is watching incredulously, as are we, in his bare apartment. And Sam meets up with Torres. And then Bucky shows up and starts yelling at him and tells him he shouldn't have given up the shield and he didn't have the right. And Sam says not to lecture him on his rights. Then he tells him who he's going after, which is the leader of the Flag Smashers, and how he came up with this information. Yeah. They argue about the big three, which is very funny. And we learn that Bucky read The Hobbit.
In 1937, when it first came out, which was adorable. I kind of like that he's a nerd, because you kind of get the sense that he was nerdy in the first Cap movie. He was definitely the cool cat, right? But he was hanging out with Cap, who was like drawing comic books, basically. He's like, he's an artist guy.
Right.
Like, you could tell that he was bridging that gap between, like, I just happen to be big and handsome and awesome. Yeah. But secretly, I listen to nerdy podcasts.
I guess that book was fairly popular when it came out, but it seemed more of a kid's book. So it's a little weird that somebody who was I guess he was probably, he's around 20 in 1937.
So I poked around a bit, because that, I mean, when you start dropping numbers from me, I get a little weird. not weird, but it came out in Europe in 37 and America in 38. So it was going to be it doesn't make sense. Who cares? Good enough.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't make perfect
sense. Also, I kind of love the idea. Here's my secret plan behind Bucky's thinking is he knows that it came out in America in 38, but he's messing with Sam, who doesn't know it, and only a true fan would know that.
That's right.
He's testing his nerd credibility. Also, I do want to get into the big three later, because it feels like they're missing Hydra.
Yeah, no, I know. It doesn't feel complete at all, right? I mean, I didn't really go through it from a movie-by-movie perspective, but I mean, certainly those are... I mean, when have they fought? They have never fought wizards.
No, I mean, there's that guy who hangs out with Thanos, who's the equivalent of Doctor Strange, right? Like the evil Doctor Strange. But that's like, I don't know, magic and science
Ebony,
at that point.
Ebony Maw, right?
Yeah, and like, and it doesn't feel to me like Sam would come up with the big three concept, but also...
No. Well, apparently it's not just Sam, right?
I know, that's what I mean. Like, later on, White Cap is like...
he's a wave now? Is that what he is? He's a White Cap?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, yeah, I like it. A bit later on where he's like Black Falcon, and then like, because we were about to call the other guy Black Captain America, and I'd rather call John Walker White Cap, because it's funnier.
It is funnier. It's a better name.
Just faux Cap.
Yeah, I like the big three thing is interesting, because it does suggest that like somewhere in like the DOD hierarchy, right, somebody has come up with it, written like a position paper on how they've identified the top three threats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like... I don't know if they're still current, but like at one point it came out that America had a plan to invade Canada. And I'm like, of course, because that's your job, right? Like your job is to just worry about threats and all that. So I love the idea of somewhere in the Pentagon, somebody's being like, I've got a concept and I know how to pitch it. Three, big three.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Are they car manufacturers? Are they villains? It's unclear.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
Hydra deserves to be on that list.
I mean, they're gone. They're gone.
Oh, yeah, definitely. They feel very good.
All right. Bucky's coming with him. We got a road trip, except it's on a plane. They have a brief staring contest for fun. And Bucky asks if there's a plan. And Sam says, he says Sam can't call him Buck. And then Sam jumps out of the plane. At 200 feet, Bucky says he doesn't need a chute, but he doesn't exactly have a Steve-esque landing, and Red Wing gets it all on film.
In fairness, I think, so Steve A goes into water, which I know, at that height, doesn't matter, but B, when he jumps out of the Triskelion, he lands on his shield, and even he's looking like, I'm not sure I'm going to make this one. Like,
yeah.
Like, it's a desperation move for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. They find the Flag Smashers.
Between the 200 feet, well, this is what you did to me last week. Also, I don't know if you've noticed, we've started watching a show where our two protagonists are a lot more they don't like each other as much, and it's rubbing off on us. Anyway, go.
Anytime you're ready. No. Okay, they find the Flag Smashers moving what they think is weapons, and Bucky moves in, and they have some fun banter about Bucky being White Panther. The Flag Smashers start moving out, and Sam thinks they have a hostage. Bucky jumps on the back of the first truck in plain sight of the second truck, and he realizes the truck's contents are actually medical supplies, not weapons. He finds the hostage, and she kicks him out of the door and onto the other truck where the two guys are waiting on top, and we get some fight stuff. She jumps over, and they start beating him up, and she grabs a Red Wing and smashes it, which is very rude, although Bucky enjoys that. Sam flies in. More fight. Sam's down. They've got him down, and in flies Walker on a helicopter, throwing the shield to help out. His buddy swings in, too. More fight. And Sam and Bucky seem pretty, pissed off about this whole situation. Bucky is hanging under the truck, and Sam flies under and grabs him, and they end up rolling into a field. They realize that the baddies are all super soldiers, of course. Walker's buddy gets thrown off of the truck, and Walker throws the shield under him to save him. And then who they thought was the hostage kicks him off the truck. What's her name again? I've got it.
Carly Morgan.
Carly, yeah, right.
I keep wanting to say Morgan Taller, which is different.
Yeah. After all the fight is over, Bucky and Sam are walking down the road when Walker and his pals pull up and offer them a ride, and they just keep walking. I love it that they just don't, like, they don't even have to talk to each other. They just know they're not getting, you know, at the beginning, they're not getting in the Jeep with them.
I've got notes specifically about this Jeep. How awesome is that Jeep? It looks like they pulled that out of mothballs. Like the original Cap used to drive around in that Jeep. They don't feel those anymore. What is that?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's in awesome. Well, they're in Germany, right? Which is there's a gigantic U.S. military presence in Germany since the end of World War II. So maybe it is. It's vintage.
I guess so. You'd think. Anyway, who cares? John does not want to hear it.
Walker says they need to work together. They do get in, and Walker's friend reveals that they weren't tracking the Flag Smashers. They were tracking Sam and Bucky. Bucky does not like Walker's friend's code name, which is Battlestar. So he gets out. Walker says he's not trying to replace Steve, but he would love to have Cap's wingman at his side, which is too much for Sam. So they're both out. The Flag Smashers head to a safe house run by some sympathizers. Carly gets a text from someone saying they took what didn't belong to them, and that he or she is going to kill them. Yeah. Carly says after tomorrow, there's no going back. And they all shout together that they want one world, one people. On the plane, Bucky wants to take the shield back, and Sam reminds him that's not a great idea. It didn't work out so great for them the last time. Bucky says there's someone Sam needs to meet, so they head to Charm City, aka Baltimore, and have a fun interaction with some kids in the street before they meet Isaiah Bradley.
I really like that he calls him Black Kid.
Yeah, because right? Are you Black Kid?
It's come up a couple of times, like I think when we just discussed Black Panther, like there is really a trope where you have a black character in comics.
Oh yeah,
but you just stick black in front of the name. It's like come on.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were just about to meet Black Cat, so I'm glad that they were like, let's just nip this one in the bud before anybody starts doing that.
So as we said, Bradley was a super soldier back in the 50s, and he fought Bucky in Korea. Bucky says Hydra feared Isaiah, and Isaiah wonders if Bucky's come back to kill him. Bucky says that there are more super soldiers, but Isaiah doesn't want to talk about it anymore because he was locked up and tested for 30 years when he came back. They get thrown out, and Sam's yelling at Bucky when the cops show up, and they start hassling Sam, of course, until they recognize him, which is all horrible. Then they realize that there's a warrant out for Bucky because he missed a therapy session, so they arrest him. At the station...
Carl Lumley. I want to take a moment, and that was incredible.
Yeah, that was really, really was intense. That was really well. It was well written and it was well acted.
I suspect we'll come back to it after. But holy cow, it was well written. It was well acted. They introduce him from behind, and our heroes are in deep background, like they're all blurred out. He is intense, like nobody's business.
Yeah,
Sam Jackson on his meanest day is going to run and cower from this guy. He was intense. And I think, loved it.
Having seen him play Martian Manhunter's father,
right.
which is, you know, like an old person, but an old person in a very different state. He's got good range being able to play both of those, like, you know, the sort of very confused guy who is has memory problems and whatnot. And then this guy who seems just like scary.
Yeah.
He exuded barely contained power and righteous rage. Like, exactly. You know, he's mad about the right things. And it's
just presence too. Right. I mean, Carl Lumley, he was back. He was in Alias.
Alias. Yes,
yeah. When he was great in that. Yeah. Really enjoyed that. And he did one of the, he did Manhunter in Justice League. He was the voice.
He was
the animated series. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Just all around amazing actor. And I want to call specific attention to that scene.
Yeah.
Because it's, it's that's
really
killer.
Really well done. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically, Bucky tucks his tail between his legs and runs.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, not welcome here. See ya. Like, it's great. Yeah.
At the station, Walker gets Bucky out because he's too valuable an asset. Dr. Rayner is there and gets Bucky and Sam in a room where they work out their feelings about each other. First with the miracle question and then with the soul gazing exercise. Bucky says Sam aggravates him because he gave up the shield, and if Steve was wrong about Sam, then he could be wrong about Bucky. Sam says he did what he thought was right. Outside, Walker tries to recruit them again. They say they're more effective as free agents. Walker tells them to stay out of his way.
And that was the scene right out of 48 Hours.
It was like,
we're the rogue cops, and you're the by the books cops. And it's just, whatever. Yeah. Although it was ominous when Whitecap tells him, you better stay out of the way. Because he keeps ramping up. He's like, you're really intense, aren't you?
It's ominous, and it's also defensive.
Yeah.
Right. We'll talk about Walker in a little bit.
Yeah, fascinating guy.
In Slovakia, the flag smashers are loading stuff onto a plane when the power broker's men start closing in on them. One flag smasher volunteers to stay behind and hold them off. He gets killed as the plane takes off. Back in Baltimore, Bucky says they need to get more information about Hydra, and Sam isn't happy about it, but he says they're going to see Zemo. So we cut to Germany, where we pan down the hall of a prison, and then we see a man in a cell, and it's Guy English.
It is Guy English. trivia question, Dan, since you started this off.
I was going to go there, but go ahead, ask. I can answer before you ask.
Cell number
2187, which is Princess Leia's cell on the Death Star.
Is that right?
Yep, 100%.
When they put a number like that on the screen, I'm like, what?
Did they have? Oh, 2 and 8. They just said it. They didn't.
No, it's on the screen. No,
it's a Z-E-N-E.
No, in Star Wars, I mean.
Oh, yeah. No, she says 2187. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And but I looked at that. I'm like, was that the phone number of a childhood friend? Like, why is that committed to memory? You know, I'm like,
I knew where that
it's
was.
It's like now that you say it, I know it. Like, I know the line. I mean, like, I couldn't.
Yeah, it's like 1138.
I wouldn't have been able to come up with it on my own. But when you say 2187, I'm like, oh yeah, that's I can hear Han saying it.
Yep. I like that a lot. So let's start with Walker, because we met him very briefly at the end of last week, but we didn't really get a sense of him. I think they're doing something interesting here, which is the way they build him up in the beginning of the episode. He seems like, I don't know, what's the right, like,
yeah. Well, he seems like he has good intentions, but he's just like, he's going about everything the wrong
way. And it's not even that so much as, like, I think what he reflects is a certain degree of the obliviousness of the white privileged dude, right? Where it's like, I'm clearly trying to do my best. Why aren't you helping me? Right? Like, why aren't you helping me help you?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It would be easier for me, right, Sam, if you would be my wingman. And it's like, and it's always that last line, because that's an actual pretty good speech. It's like, look, I know you didn't want the shield to be with me. I'm just trying to be the best I can. I'm going to try to live up with it.
Yeah.
And I need you to help me. And it's like, oh, that's exactly not what Steve would say. Steve would be like, how can I help you?
Right. And let's talk about his introduction, right? Because it appears, I mean, I didn't go through and count everybody, but it looked like it was an all black band playing him onto the stage. And I'm sure that whole setup is very deliberate. And so here's this guy who basically stole the shield from a black man. And then he's getting played on by this black band. And then, you know, and so he's basically just appropriated something that has been given to a black person, and he's taken it over as his own, and he's getting played on. And then the kicker, which I think is, I think this is some A-plus trolling on the part of the showrunners, because, but you know, he gets up there and says, "Good morning, America."
Yeah.
Like this is America. This is how America operates. And, and it's funny because I just think like they used, I feel like they used that name and sort of are trolling Disney in a way, because Disney owns ABC and owns Good Morning America.
So there's a couple of things with that. Good morning, America. And the way, there's a delay there too. Like, good morning, America. Like, it's a wake up call. Like, this is what's happening. B, obviously it's a show and they're kind of trolling Disney the way, what's his name? John Oliver is just out for AT&T's blood all the time.
Yeah.
Like in a weird, funny, just, you can get away with that stuff these days. Also it, reminded me immediately of Ronald Reagan's
"Good Morning in America." Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right. Morning in America.
It's Morning America kind of thing, which is I don't know how to portray that. I don't have the words to actually explain why that ties into this white privilege thing.
It's just this side. So if you had a needle that went between patriotism and nationalism,
yes,
it's like just over the line into like, towards the nationalism side.
Yeah, it's like
in the middle there.
It's one record scratch, you know, like somebody danced too hard on the floor and it skipped a little bit, and now you're like, now you're in nationalism territory as opposed to patriotism, I guess, which is also, I don't know, I have a difficult time with either of those, and because the line does get blurred, and here I think they're using that as a signifier of it being into blurred, like, pretty intentionally. I don't think it's an accident that his sidekick is a black kid. And I say he's a kid. I don't know if he's the same age or not. For some reason, he seems junior to him.
That seems like they're both. He makes a comment early on about Walker failing drama class, which led me to believe that they were potentially contemporaries, maybe even went to the same high school. It's unclear.
Yeah. Maybe. It did strike me that when Whitecap was out on the field getting celebrated, he was there in his like combat uniform, just hanging out.
You mean
he wasn't part of the pomp and circumstance. Right, he was not like an equal part of this team. He was just a guy that they would send along on missions to hopefully, I don't know, catch a bullet or something, help him out. Who knows? Like and it doesn't seem, later on when they're in the Jeep from like 1948, Battlestar doesn't believe that super soldiers exist.
Well, he doesn't think that they're current, I think, is the thing.
Well,
he's suggesting they're not. They don't exist anymore.
That whole scene seems weird because in the intro scene that we see for Walker, he's doing some pretty super soldier stuff. We don't know yet, but it's weird. And you'd think at least New Cap would be briefed on Bucky being
I think they know.
Enhanced
I think
human,
they
right?
know that. I think they know that. I think they just assumed that he was the only one, right? Like everybody.
They think the serum's done. Is
yeah.
That
well,
it?
Like, that's the no thing, more? Right? Nobody knew about Isaiah, right? And like nobody knew about anybody other, basically, than Steve and Bucky, or maybe Red Skull
and the stuff from Siberia. All that, you know, those guys in
right,
Siberia.
Right, right. And I think
nobody, that was all secret.
The point being, like, it's not widely known that there are anybody other than the sort of the most public versions of it, right? Everybody thinks the super soldier is a thing from the 40s, and these guys have it because they were like cryogenically frozen.
Yeah.
So, I derailed that a little bit, as is my way. Walker, it seems to me, has a doubt in himself that Steve didn't have. Steve was always a plucky guy, right? He was always going to get it, like, when it was like, whoever can get that flag off the flagpole gets to go home early on the 5 mile, whatever it was, marathon. I don't know if you can do a 5 mile marathon. And
a run.
Yeah. And Steve has the presence of thought to just, take the whole flagpole down and capture the flag. This is in the first Cap movie. Walker seems to be a top achieving human being who still doesn't feel he can live up to things, and I think that's going to start leading to very, very dark places. sort of as evidenced by his, like, don't get in my way. Like, he's trying to be a nice guy, but you get the sense that it's like, if you start undermining me, I'm going to mess you up.
Yeah, he's going to have a bad reaction.
Well, he went from very, you know, I think very, what's the right word? Accommodating, right? Through this whole thing, right? He seems like he's bending over backwards to be,
he's bending over as long as you recognize that he's still, you know, he's the,
yeah, even there, I'm not sure that that's the case. Like, I don't know. I feel like the show is playing him as very earnest, even if he's not Steve. Yes. It wants you to think he is, like, he's doing his best, right? And he's, agreed. I think a lot of what the sort of negativity for him is about, like, again, sort of that unconscious bias aspect of not realizing exactly, you know, where his privilege comes from. And I don't think, I think he's decided in the end of this that the stay out of my way thing is just like, all right, look, I gave you every chance, essentially, right? And at this point, you're going to do it your way. Well, we're going to do it our way. And
I think that's true. And I think the line that says that is when they first meet him in the Jeep. I forget what Bucky says or Sam says. Because they're not even yet in the Jeep yet. And he tells them that, like, I've put in the work. Oh, yeah, I think Bucky's like, you're just not Captain America. Okay, like, you're...
Yeah, having you can, you can carry that shield. Having that shield doesn't make you Captain America, yeah.
Yeah, and he's like, look, I put in the work. Before he makes it. I don't know if that's a joke or not about jumping on grenades. And I think that's his... I think that's a very insightful tack to take for somebody. And it's a very 2021-ish sort of take about, like, no, you actually think you do deserve this, despite the fact that it's kind of been handed to you in a lot of ways.
Yeah, you were born on third base but thought you hit a triple kind of situation.
Right.
I doubt that he's busted his ass to, like,
but that's the thing. I mean, the thing that made Cap Captain America, you know, as Dr. Erskine pointed out, is his heart, not the fact that he could you know, throw the shield.
Right.
So the fact that you have jumped on a whole bunch of grenades is good, but also the fact that you're touting your abilities.
Also that you did it four times and have a reinforced helmet and it's a thing you do.
Yeah.
That's performative, right?
Right, exactly.
Well, I mean, look, I'm never going to tell anybody who jumps on a grenade that they're being performative. I think that's a little bit
well,
much.
Well,
when it's no longer a risk,
I swear to God, I kind of like that he's trying to explain the technique of how to jump on a grenade so that you don't get blown up. I'm like, it seems useful. Like, you're trying to actually be nice. But yeah, he's certainly one that... I think he's the guy in some ways that they will, what's his name? The guy for the bad guy, the guy from The Fugitive.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Thank you. I was about to go with Men in Black and then I'm like,
that's also accurate.
Yeah. He's much more than all of that, but whatever. First one that came to mind, in that scene, I think that, Walker is the guy that they were looking for in that scene. And then Steve showed up.
Yeah. I mean, he's basically the pinnacle of, you know, the soldier, you know, with physical development and all that, right? Like, you talk about how he scores off of the charts and all these things. Like, he is, I think that's a great point. He's exactly the person they would have picked if Steve had not come along. And it's going to expose all the flaws of why that's not the right person to pick.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And I think they did a little bit of that in The Hulk, too, with the guy from Pulp Fiction.
Tim Roth. This is a fun game we're playing.
I'm going to stop remembering any names and just toss them to you all the time. Yeah, Tim Roth. I don't know. I forget his background. Super decorated SAS guy. I forget. Russian immigrant to the UK. SAS guy. Like, very badass kind of guy.
They're gonna whatever excuse we can get to use Tim Roth.
Right. Yeah. Then they're going to go put him to go capture Bruce Banner. He does not a great job, but mostly because Bruce Banner turns into the Hulk and you can't stop the Hulk. And after he gets injected with a version of a super soldier serum, he's actually really, really effective. I mean, until the Hulk just kicks
until,
him.
Yeah. It's the Hulk. Except it's the Hulk. Hulk. It's still the Hulk, yeah.
Yeah, and yet that injection of the serum sort of leads me, at least as a viewer, to think that he amped it up. He already had a hyper-aggressive attitude, and he thought he was the most badass guy going. Once he found out he wasn't, he wanted more and more and more of that, and I suspect we may be seeing a similar tale here.
Right.
Yeah, no, yeah. I agree. Yeah. I think Walker is, if anything, I would not say Walker is as, aggressive as Blonsky was.
He's
not that level, yeah. But he is, here's the other fundamental thing, and this plays into, we won't go too much into spoiler stuff from the comics insofar as they apply, but I think fundamentally the thing was Cap always had allegiance to what he thought were the best ideals of the country. Whereas, as opposed to having loyalty to, the government. And in this episode, Walker specifically says, like, I'm basically the government, right? He is a government-funded, government-made superhero.
Yeah. And in fact, one of them says, oh, that sounds like something that somebody with a lot of funds would say. And he's like, hey, we got a lot of funds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, you did not listen to what he just said, because that's not good.
Yeah. Right. Well, there's also even a tip of the hat to this at the end credits, which I was running through this week and looking at a little more closely. In some of the credits, they have the posters, the Cap is Back posters, and has like John Walker's Captain America. And in one of them, it's scratched out. And I think I can read the first line, but I think it says manufactured hero.
Yes.
Yeah, so like that I think is in a nutshell kind of what they're going for here is like this is somebody who has been focus grouped, field tested, like they're trying to figure out, hey, you know what worked great last time? A really, charming, aw shucks, blonde white guy. Like, let's just copy that. It reminds me of, to take a quick tangent, the PC makers in the late 90s, early 2000s who thought the success of the iMac was that it was blue. And they're let's make our computers blue. And you're like, you missed the point.
And it was all a bad ripoff of Bondi Blue, which
was exactly. But like fundamentally
exciting at the time, but like not
right. Fundamentally, you copied the wrong thing, right? Like that, exactly. And that's where we're going with Walker. Yeah. Like they picked the packaging rather than what was inside.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do agree. I do think it's telling that the two examples he gives during his Good Morning America speech are Tony Stark and Bruce Banner.
Yeah, of course.
One of the first times we've heard Dr. Banner mentioned in that guy's a rampaging hell monster. Like, why?
Yeah.
It's weird. It's like, oh, yeah, I love Dr. Jekyll.
Well, he's a fan of Dr. Jekyll. But now he's smart. But now he's smart, Hulk, right? He's a version of the Hulk that is palatable to everyone.
And he also burnt his arm off doing Infinity Snap.
Yeah. I mean, like, kids come up to him in a diner. So he's reached a level of popularity now since the blip.
Yeah, okay. Okay. That makes sense. It just, it did seem
But it does
like
seem weird, right? When
weird.
You think about, the Hulk traditionally as a character.
Well, it's also two characters that are for close enough, squint, and they're self-created, right?
Yeah,
sure.
So.
Yeah, fair point.
Right. Yeah.
We want to talk a little more about Isaiah and the background on that character.
Sure.
I mean, as a lens to, I think the larger. So
I'm still scared.
Well, so there's a lens to the larger thing that we're going into here, which is, and we talked about this last week as well, right? Like they are not shying away from talking about America's problematic history with race in this series, and. Both Isaiah and obviously some of the other stuff that we have in this episode, just as we had the bank scene last week, tie into this idea of there being, you can't more like obviously have this idea of two Americas than literally having like multiple people vying for Captain America, right? That kind of shines a spotlight on it. And so we do have the scene with the cops, which feels, certainly true to life, if a bit like, I will say my only complaint was that it feels a little bit jammed in there, but you've got a 47-minute episode, you got to get from point A to point B.
And it makes rough sense. They're coming out of
out of place.
They're yelling in the street. I don't know if you've noticed, those guys hate sidewalks. They do not use sidewalks.
It's Hydra,
also Baltimore.
It's Hydra, and then it's sidewalks. That's the next
Baltimore
thing on the list.
Baltimore police are bad guys.
Yes, well,
like, even when they walk out of the police station,
I've seen The Wire, John.
Yeah,
yeah. It's just they walk down the middle of the street away from the police station, which is like, come on, guys. Like, that's at least a $30 ticket right there, and nobody has the guts to give it to you, but it's... come on. They're just walking down the middle of the street in rural Germany, I suppose. Anyway, whatever.
There aren't even any sidewalks in rural Germany.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's not true. Really, but it did just crack me up that they were just walking down the middle of the street.
Yeah. I also thought it was hysterical that the driver's name is Gary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like
I don't know what that is.
My favorite go-to name for just like someone who's
it's a Gary.
Peripheral to the story.
It's just Gary. A Gary.
It's a Gary. Yeah. Obviously that scene. They don't put like we saw the bank scene at the end of last episode. The loan at the bank scene from the end of last episode juxtaposed with presenting a new brave new, quote unquote brave new Captain America, meeting the old Captain America, and then having that juxtaposed with sort of the realities of policing in specifically Baltimore,
yeah.
Which is obviously a troubled city. I mean, whatever. If you want my thesis on that, don't ask me. David Simon has got it covered. There's like at least five seasons of that that are great. I kind of liked what I also liked is that his partner, the cop's partner, sort of just whispers to him that, like, okay, you don't. This is Sam Wilson. And then he's like, oh my God, I'm sorry, Mr. Wilson. Like, did that matter? I don't think it mattered. You still came in rolling hot, you know? Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you're one step away from saying, I didn't realize you were, you know, one of the good ones. Right. Like, you can kind of
read
that.
Exactly what he's saying. It's exactly what he's saying.
Yes. Yeah. And with all the awkwardness,
at that point you should just get back in your car and leave. Like, don't even say anything. Just get out of there.
I mean, I think they would if they didn't have to arrest Bucky, basically.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I think they wanted any excuse, but then they're like, oh, God.
Sorry, I gotta arrest your buddy.
I do. Maybe we should check in on the relationship a little bit later. But I do immediately love that as soon as the cops show up, they just present a united front. Like, Bucky's like, no, he's not. He's not bothering me. Like, what are you talking about? And then Bucky, because he does not understand what the hell is going on, is like, just give them a new ID. And Sam's like, no, oh, hell no.
Yeah,
like that,
yeah,
I'm not,
right.
I'm not bending down to this at all. Like that, screw that. And then when they want to take Bucky in, Sam's like, sort of a little begrudgingly maybe, but he's like, the president pardoned him for that.
All the murders.
Yeah. Well, I'm like, really? Because that's a lot of murders. Also, at the beginning of the episode, you just sauntered onto a U.S. Air Force base, which seems that's a lot of pardoning. Like, not only are we not going to send you to jail for infinity years, feel free to drop by an Air Force base. It feels a little
well, and
little
so
weird.
And so that brings up, I mean, like, you know, you can keep peeling this apart, and I think that's one of the things that I like about it is that there are so many different layers to that, because that's how Bucky gets treated as a white guy who killed a whole bunch of people.
Right.
And Isaiah is, you know, he comes home from doing his service abroad and, you know, for his country, and he gets stuck in prison for 30 years and experimented on.
Yeah. Also Korea. Sorry, I didn't tackle this at the time. Very, very bad. Very bad.
Yeah.
The US, whatever. Giant war. U.S. Wanted to prevent communism, as typical engagements at the time. They pressed all the way up, and MacArthur crossed a river that engaged Chinese forces, and then millions of Chinese forces reinforced by North Korean forces pushed them all the way down to where it is now, like where no man's land is now. And those series of battles, that war, saw American army leaving their tanks and stuff behind because they were running and they were dying in the cold. It was bad. It was a really, really, really bad war. And it's one where America took a real trouncing. And I'm saying that because, it's forgotten. It's literally called a forgotten war. B, it's no good. Things went really, really bad. And C, the fact that they would drop Isaiah there in the middle of nowhere to go stop Bucky from murdering people. It's like, that's a no good, very bad situation. It's people are more familiar, I think, with Vietnam because at least the country when we were growing up, at least Dan, I don't know about you, but there was, you know, like we had TV shows, like hell, even Magnum PI was like, okay, we're a bunch of ex-Vietnam vets. And there was some cultural acceptance of what it means to have done that, and there was little to none for the Korean War, and it was bad.
Right. I mean, even the most famous fictionalized version of the Korean War, MASH, is basically about Vietnam.
It's 100% about Vietnam. Yeah. Also, everybody should watch MASH. That's what I was saying. Anyway, so I did want to bring that up because the sort of the pathos that is exhibited by that character is, it ain't great. Like it's just the difficulty there and at the time and the consequences to what it may be doing to people that they frankly both in real life, but in the MCU had been experimenting on were not concerns. And while it may seem that like somehow this came out of the blue, it doesn't. It sort of falls out of it.
Yeah,
it's an earned story. It really is an earned story, and it's one that I'm sort of glad that they're at least addressing. And it ties in a little bit in some ways to this policing action that we just saw and the whole kind of fallout from that. So I understand why those two scenes are tied together in a way.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to give it too much short shrift, but I know we are unfortunately time limited.
Yeah,
we
got it.
No. Right.
Here's the thing.
I got a couple other things.
Well, I just
plugged.
There's something.
We can do nothing but give it short shrift. Even this show is giving it short shrift. So it's. I think we were all happy it's there. Let's move on. And
I'm sure we will have more. I'm certain. I wanted to mention the Flag Smashers.
Yes, that was one thing I wanted to talk about.
This week, I think we have an interesting viewpoint on them, right? Like, so I've definitely seen people talking about like, well, you know, they just want like the world the way it was, like where there was more resources to go around and no borders. And like, you know, are they the bad guys, I think is the question.
Well, I think, and that's one of the things that Marvel does. I mean, when they do it well, right?
Yes.
They make their villains have a point.
It reminded me
a
bit.
And these villains have a point. The world is apparently gone from one government back to a whole bunch of different governments fighting each other.
Right. And I want to say, I thought I saw some echoes here of, not to spoil it too much, but what we talked about in season one of Stargirl, right? Where like the bad guys have a platform that's actually like, is this evil? Like, And I kind of feel like that's what the Flag Smashers are being set up for here, which is we're supposed to think they're the bad guys, but really, it seems like from this week's episode, the Power Broker is the one who probably had the Super Soldier Serum that the Flag Smashers stole, and are clearly much more intent, right? Like, the Flag Smokers, Flag Smokers.
Yeah, that's later on tonight when we all have a few doobies and talk about the show again.
The Flag Smashers... Like, that leader guy beat up Torres last week, right? And beat up a cop and stuff. And, like, clearly is targeting, like, systems of authority. The Power Brokers guys murdered that dude straight up. So, you know, I think there's an interesting question here about exactly who is behind this.
Yeah, I mean, we already see them being lauded by the guy that sets them up in a safe room that his wife and him built, which is like, it doesn't seem like he's a loaded guy. That seems like a fair investment, right? And minimum, you're putting the lives of your family on the line in order to support these people. When they're flying away, I looked a little bit more closely the most recent time I watched it. There's like bottles of water and stuff in the back.
Yeah, there are.
Yeah, right.
It's humanitarian supplies, seem like. They stole medicine and vaccines in the earlier scene.
Well, they said it was vaccines, that I was not sure if it was vaccines or more super juice.
I think it's vaccines.
Yeah.
I think it is. I think they're stealing medical supplies and like, they actually have more of a humanitarian bent.
I do think so. Here's the thing. They're acts of, I don't even want to call them terrorism, but their violent acts that have brought them to the attention of our heroes include stealing a bunch of vaccines and stealing a bunch of money from a Swiss bank. not horrible as far as we can tell, you know, like, obviously you're breaking the rule of law and that's no good and we should sort this out in a better way. But I mean, is that, are those targets that make you evil per se? Not really. And, certainly the send off that our guy has against the power brokers, man, is, first of all, the thing that makes him an effective force is, like, this guy's clearly a true believer, right? He's invested.
Yeah.
But also, at the same time, we get to see that they are not necessarily doing anything that is harming anybody more than trying to secure a future for themselves or somebody else. Obviously, we were given that line by Sam just last week that says, when things get better for one group, they tend to get worse for the other.
Right.
And I think that's kind of where we're going with those guys. And eventually we're going to learn who this power broker character is. I know he exists in the comics. I don't care. We'll figure it out.
It's going to be anybody.
Who cares? They can recycle the name.
I have a conspiracy theory. I have a conspiracy corner theory for it, but we don't have to go into it this week.
Well, yeah, I know we're running out of time, and I think, Dan, you're mostly the most time pressed here. But so do you want to run with it? Do you want to?
I'll just tell you that I know we haven't seen Sharon Carter yet, and I worry that she's the power broker.
Oh!
I'm not sure I'm right about that. I don't think I am, but that's like my deep conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
I think it's General Ross, who we saw giving out power broker badness to Blonsky.
Oh, that's possible. I don't think he's in this, but...
Well, yeah. We've also seen him in the trailers for Black Widow. And Black Widow super soldier. So,
yeah. I wanted to say that reader Eric wrote in to point out that some of the therapy scene is kind of ridiculous.
Yes.
Because Sam, as someone who worked with returning vets, is a real jerk to Bucky, and it doesn't seem like, you know, it seems like maybe he'd have a little bit more empathy throughout all of this and be a little kinder, but it's kind of done for to set up their relationship as a buddy cop style.
And, you know,
so
it's not just him reaching out to some random dude, it's him with a history with this guy, right? Like, they have a long history of not liking each other. I will say, I think my MVP line in this episode, which I feel like was the equivalent of the, maybe not the equivalent, but like in the same vein of the Vision line that everybody quoted from WandaVision.
Yes.
For me is the Bucky's, if he was wrong about you, that means he was wrong about me. And I think that's, finally we got to the heart of what Bucky's issue is, which is Bucky is worried that he will always be a killer. He tells Isaiah the same thing, right? He says, I'm not a killer anymore. And Isaiah says, what, you think you can just wake up one day and decide like who you want to be? That's not how it works. Well, maybe that's how it works for you. You know, like, again, a divide in our okay, you're a white guy who murdered a bunch of people. Maybe you can decide to not be a murderer anymore. I don't have that luxury.
I agree so much. And man, if we had specced out an episode of our podcast to have landed on that thought, and then wrapped it up, I don't think we could have done better. Because that's the killer line. Right?
Yeah, like, I agree.
Yeah. I agreed with pretty much everything Eric said. I'm at a loss, man. Bucky seems to know that he's flawed and trying to improve himself, and Sam seems to think he's a hero, which is kind of what he was doing with his sister last episode. Sam's wonderful. Certainly didn't go around for 80 years murdering people, so, you know. Chalk mark for that guy. But at the same time, I think that's ultimately the interesting thing. Why did Sam reject that shield? Because I don't think his final response is that you and Steve may never understand that I did what I think is right. And I think what he thinks is right is rejecting the symbolism of
America.
Like
equality
and white America. Yeah, well, it's no.
I mean, not the sense of equality.
Those are two different.
No.
Those are two different things.
That's
right?
not what I'm like saying. The, what well, I'm saying is point. The point, the illusion of equality is what my point was. Right? He thinks He said,
it's,
you know,
literally a facade. It's here's a facade of America. Yeah. And it's like, I don't want to adopt the facade.
He doesn't want the symbolism of like, but this is all the stuff that it's done wrong. And I think this is also the root of why he is the right person for that, is because he did what he thought was right, even when it was something that was not to his advantage. Right.
I completely agree.
It's not quite jumping on a grenade, but it's kind of a metaphorical.
Oh, is it? It's a metaphorical jumping on a grenade. It's a real jumping on a grenade because the blast radius of that is just you, right? Like there's a whole culture and society that has to go along with that. And to say that, like, hey, look, I know you appreciate this as a symbol of America. This has not been our experience or my experience. I'm going to have to. You know, give me that shield. I'll put that one on the grenade. We'll see how that happens. But and I think his visceral reaction to meeting Isaiah sort of furthers that plot line, right? I think it cements something that he knew, but maybe didn't have a symbol to wrap his head around. And Isaiah and the mistreatment we've been exposed to has been revealed is, I think, certainly going to propel the story forward, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Yep. Yeah. All right. We should do a rating really quick before we wrap up here, although I imagine it will not be too surprising. Guy?
No, probably not.
Carl Lumley.
Is that above a Biff?
Are you joking?
I mean, I think it is. I want to know what you see.
Yes, it is above a Biff. It is a first affirmation that this is a great show. Yeah. It's got like things around the edges, but yeah, it's great. It's really, really wonderful.
John?
Yeah, Biff. I think the first time I watched it, I was kind of like, well, I don't think I appreciated the subtle way that they got a lot of things in that I didn't quite get the first time. Then I watched it like 3 or 4 times. By the end I was like,
you've been beaten into submission.
They're doing a lot here. You may not appreciate on a casual glance. I think it all works quite well.
I think it's interesting to have the mix of the, each of these episodes so far has had a big action set piece in it. And it seems like that's kind of how they're structuring this. And sometimes it can feel like stuff gets lost around the middle, but I still appreciate the chance to dig into these characters a lot more. And I really, again, my appreciation for Bucky has gone up so much in this show over his character in the movies. I feel I really enjoy both him and Sam.
Well, just like WandaVision, right? I mean, taking these characters that you didn't get enough time
peripheral.
With. And
So,
and making you really become invested in them.
Exactly. All right, well, we'll be back next week to talk about episode 3 of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, at which point we'll be halfway through. Wild.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm ready for it. I feel like, in some ways, I feel like there is so much here, and yet there's not enough time.
Mm-hmm. So I really do feel that way. I feel very time constrained.
Yeah, well, we'll probably do something a little longer as these we get towards the back half of the season. I'm guessing we'll spend a little more time, too. Even on the shows, yes, I know. Both shows. Both our show and their show. Not enough time. Well, I would like to thank everybody out there for listening. Of course, I'd like to thank my co-host, Guy English. Thanks for being here.
694-2187. Oh, wait. Do not actually... That may actually be a phone number, so don't call that. 555-2187. How about that?
Seamless. John Moult's always a pleasure.
Is that Gary's phone number?
It's Gary...
Gary, I got your number.
did we just get a Steely Dan reference in the end of our show?
That's not Steely Dan, is it?
That's not Steely Dan.
No.
Wait, who is that?
That's
I can't remember. Is it? It's not Rick Springfield.
It's the only
it is Rick
one
Springfield,
you need.
867. Yo, nah. Yeah, now we're Googling
it. Oh, no, so I'm doing it.
Tommy Two-Tone, I am doing a Steely Dan, and you're doing something else.
Yeah, stay with it. Right.
Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. Hope you're enjoying the show. Please feel free to send us letters at biffthincouple.com or at BiffCast on Twitter. And, of course, you can at least find me in the Biff channel of the Incomparable Member Slack if you're a member. Feel free. There's a lot of conversation happening there, too. Keep rocking out. We'll see you next week.
Star Trek.
I forgot to get it.
We did.
No, you just got it at the end.
Got in under the wire.